Electric Service at MG&E. The professional union reps at Madison Teachers Incorporated, the field organizers and canvassers at For Our Future, and the staff collective right here at WORT. More information about the union is available on their website at ibew2304.com.
Hello, I'm Moira Alderson with the BBC News. America's top diplomat says Washington has submitted a draft resolution to the UN Security Council calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza linked to the release of hostages. Antony Blinken is now in Egypt as part of his latest tour of the Middle East. He's there to meet senior ministers from six Arab states and the Palestinian Authority. Here's our Middle East correspondent, Yolande Nell.
We are seeing a change in the messaging on this trip. Mr. Blinken, when he's talked about that UN Security Council draft resolution that's been drawn up, that is significant. We don't know much about the details or the timing, but of course the US, Israel's closest ally, has repeatedly shielded it at the UN Security Council. When Mr. Blinken comes here to Israel, something else that I think we're going to be hearing a lot about is this plan of Israel to go into Rafah in the south. Of course, Washington is extremely concerned about that. It said it would be a mistake.
Israeli forces say they've killed 50 Palestinian gunmen in continuing fighting around the Al-Shifa hospital in Gaza City. Combat has raged for days in and around the complex, which is crowded with patients and displaced people. The European Union is planning to clamp down on unpaid internships with a new proposal addressing concerns over the exploitation of young people in the workforce. Hannah Mullane reports.
The EU estimates there are 3.1 million trainees in Europe, half of whom are not paid. Nicola Schmidt, the EU Commissioner for Jobs and Social Rights, said it was vital this practice for unpaid internships was stamped out to stop young people being exploited by employers. The proposal has, however, received some criticism for not going far enough, as it aims to ensure fair pay only for those interns who have completed their education and doesn't include students who will be taking up many of these unpaid positions. Despite the proposal's intentions, challenges are expected in its implementation, as member states and MEPs will scrutinise and negotiate the directive before reaching an agreement.
India's main opposition party, Congress, says it's unable to campaign effectively ahead of April's general election as it's being financially crippled by the government. Congress leader Rahul Gandhi has accused the Prime Minister, Narendra Modi's BJP party, of using the tax department to starve them of money. Last month, a Congress-owned bank account was frozen for violations dating back to 2017. Mr. Gandhi said the move amounted to an erosion of democracy.
All our bank accounts have been frozen. We can do no campaign work. We cannot support our workers. We cannot support our candidates. The idea that India is the world's largest democracy, it's a lie. It's a complete lie. 20% of India votes for us and we are not able to pay 2 rupees for anything. Right? And it has been orchestrated to cripple us in the elections.
The BJP president, JP Nadda, said Congress was blaming the authorities for its financial troubles. BBC News.
Hi, I'm Mel from The Mel and Floyd Show.
And I'm Mr. Smarty Pants.
If you have an old car or truck you don't want anymore, help yourself and WRT by donating it to your favorite radio station.
It's stupid easy, which is the best kind of easy. Just call 833-WRT-CAR and arrange for someone to swing by and pick it up. It takes about 5 minutes. You get rid of that old clunker and WRT can turn it into cash.
It doesn't matter if the car runs or not. Call from any of the 50 states.
Speaking of 50, Mel, there must be at least 50 ways to donate your car to WRT.
Sure are. Give up your van, Stan.
Get a new truck, Chuck.
Donate that Kia, Rhea.
We'll take that Saab, Bob.
Even a Lamborghini, weenie.
So call 833-WRT-CAR and donate that old car, truck, or Stanley steamer to WRT today.
We promise life will never be the same again.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Mineral Point Opera House, presenting A.J. Lee and Blue Summit on Sunday, March 24th at 7 p.m. Drawing from influences such as country, soul, swing, rock, and jam music, the band uses the lens of bluegrass as a vessel through which to express and explore the thread that binds and unifies all great music. More information and tickets are available at mineralpointoperahouse.org.
Thank you. Good morning, it's 8:05 and you are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. My name's Tony Castaneda, and it's time for the Thursday, March 21st, 2024 edition of the 8 o'clock Buzz. Joining the studio, as almost always, is by my guy, producer for the Thursday 8 o'clock Buzz, Eli Wills. Good morning, Eli. How's it going, man?
Good morning, Tony. I'm doing all right, man. I'm a little tired. I was out late last night.
You're kidding me. I wasn't.
You can always tell it's going to be a good show when Tony and I are texting at, both of us texting at 1:30 a.m., figuring out what we're doing. So,
you're right. It's surprising how you can find guests at 1:30 in the morning for the show.
You'd be crazy how many people are up and willing to be on the radio. A lot of people don't know this, but that is how we get most of our guests, just accosting people on the street.
That's right. I almost actually had like a group of four guys from Duluth, Minnesota. Actually should be in their car. I want to give them a big shout out. They said they're going to be up, and they said they're going to listen to the show.
All right.
I asked them what they were doing. I was going to interview them.
They're just driving to Duluth?
Well, they live there, and they were down here for entertainment, and they stopped by the table last night just because they needed to be enlightened.
They needed to be entertained.
They looked at us and said, "You guys look like a bunch of nerds. What are you guys talking about?" Started talking, and they said, "You guys are a bunch of nerds."
Bunch of nerds.
And So this big shout out to all my our new friends up there from Duluth, Minnesota. We'll see you next time you come down. They didn't believe that. We were doing a radio show.
Yeah, driving to Duluth. Did you tell them where they could listen?
Yes, I did. And they got it online, hopefully in their car.
Hopefully one of them. I imagine one
probably
of them
they're all still in bed sleeping because they did not want to get up. So.
Hey, me neither.
So, yeah. I didn't want to get up either. That's why I stayed up all night, actually. So.
Yeah. Hey,
We did station ID. This is WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. We did the intro. Did you finish your brackets, Eli?
I did finish my bracket. I got a new strategy, Tony. I figured out which metrics were the best to make of a Final Four team, and I picked my bracket based on some advanced metrics. I've been doing some statistical learning.
Are you serious? Are you trained in that?
I am.
Statistic? No way.
I'm a I took statistics classes.
Right.
I've made a prediction. I think there's only seven teams that can win the championship this year.
All right.
There's only going to be seven teams.
And those teams are? Because I didn't fill out my bracket. I'm planning on doing it sometime after my show and before 11. So.
Yeah, well, there's the obvious ones. The number one seeds are going to be, they all have a chance, Connecticut, Purdue, Houston, UNC, the big four right there. Tennessee, great talented team, also has a chance of winning the final. And then two of the surprising pools out of this, they've said, if you're looking for some upset picks, Duke has a chance of winning the national title this year. And the big surprise, and I'll tell you guys the big surprise, is because a sixth seed has actually never made the Final Four before, but I think this year's the year it's going to happen, South Carolina.
Wow.
So if you're looking for a pick, I did the math, I ran the numbers. South Carolina this year is going to be the first sixth seed to make the Final Four.
I noticed that you didn't mention Marquette or UW.
Unfortunately, I have low faith. I told you I went to a Marquette game this year where they were playing my Xavier Musketeers, and they beat us by 30. So I have a little bit of a grudge against Marquette this year. So I picked them out early.
I think our listeners are really interested in our thoughts.
I think there's people. I think people don't. I don't know. I was filling out my bracket with Lizzie, my girlfriend, last night, and she didn't know that the lower number was the one. Like, she was like, "Which one should I pick?" And I was like, "If you're in doubt, pick the lower number." And she didn't know that that's what she should be doing. So
she's probably going to win it all.
Yeah, I think she is. So I think people. I think you underestimate that some people. Don't do this every year. So that's my two advice. If you win in doubt, pick the lower number.
All right. Well, we do have a show today, by the way, everybody, that does not involve bracketology.
Not entirely.
First of all, there's a bunch of activities that the Rafa Sister City Project has going on this weekend. Starting tonight, there is a Palestinian Mother's Day rally at the in town here, and we're going to talk to Aisha from the Rafa Sister City Project about those things that are going on. And And then later on, of course, down in Texas, there's always a lot of things going on down there. New Senate Bill 4, introduced by the Texas legislature, would give Texas police officials the right to capture and deport people who are here seeking asylum. And it goes against, I guess the federal laws, saying that it's the federal government who's in charge of the border and enforcing
our national borders.
Yes. In the laws thereof. The U.S. Supreme Court, for some reason, kind of sided with Texas on this one. Can you imagine that?
Oh, man.
So we're going to be talking to Fernando Garcia, who is the executive director of Border Network for Human Rights of El Paso. So we'll be speaking with him on the second part of the show. That's what I got. What do you got?
The views and opinions expressed on the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz do not necessarily represent the opinions of the Warp Paid staff, our board of directors, or our millions of volunteers. The Thursday 8 o'clock buzz is for entertainment purposes only.
So there. Including Eli's picks there for the brackets.
Yeah,
there,
so don't sue me when
those are not the
when Marquette wins the title.
Yeah, all right, so in a minute we're going to speak with Aisha. Stay tuned. It's 8:12. Everybody get up or don't.
Many mothers sighing. News had just come over. We had 5 years left crying. News guy wept and told us Earth was really dying. Cried so much his face was wet. Then I knew was not lying. I heard telephones, opera house, favorite melodies. I saw boys, toys, electric irons and TVs. My brain hurt like a warehouse. It had no room to spare. I had to cram so many things to store everything in there. And all the fat, skinny people.
It's 8:15. You are tuning in to WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. Joining me on the line, I'm very pleased to have Aisha, who is a member of the Madison Rafa Sister City Project. I do believe. Good morning, Aisha. How are you doing?
Good morning, Tony. How are you?
Good, thanks. I understand. You guys are, there's a lot of stuff going on this weekend, starting with tonight. That are kind of co-sponsored by the Madison Rafa Sister City Project. And we wanted to talk about those tonight, Thursday, March 21st, or the Palestinian Mother's Day Actions and Vigil on Library Mall. Can you talk a little bit about what y'all got planned for this week?
Sure. Well, for today, since it's Mother's Day in Palestine, we wanted to honor the day and honor the mothers in Palestine right now, the ones who are alive and that have been martyred, as well as the children in Palestine. So today on Library Mall, starting at 10 a.m., we're going to have two installations. One of them is a memorial to the average number of mothers, according to the UN, being martyred each day in Gaza, which is 37.
Wow.
And then the other installation will be baby clothing items from 0 to 24 months. I have been working with them. They're tiny. I'm a parent, and it's been so long since I've handled little clothes that size. And we have about 500, and they represent the named, only the named children that have been martyred in Gaza these last few months,
now,
who are under the age of two, who haven't had their second birthday yet.
Well, I mean, and it's estimated that, anywhere from 15,000 to 20,000 innocent children and mother and women have been killed in Gaza, right? Palestinians, right?
I would say higher at this point. I think just the children are 14,000 now.
Okay, and that starts today at what time? 10 a.m.
At 10 a.m. Those will be the installations. We'll also be handing out some educational flyers. And then at 3 p.m., we're inviting the community to join us for a vigil. That will be a Library Mall as well.
And
we'll be reading some poetry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you could see the installation also. Who is putting on who are the artists that are doing the installation?
It's Madison, the Fast Sister City Project, as well as the UW Chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine.
Okay.
So it's volunteers.
Okay, great. All right, and then on Monday, March 25th, you guys got something going on next week. Can you talk about those activities?
Monday?
Yeah,
I know on Sunday we have a Read Palestine at Room of One's Own event. It's a story read aloud at 1 p.m.
Okay.
If you could refresh my memory on Monday.
What I've got listed here is it's a Madison premiere of Israelism at the Madison Central Library. It's a film. Okay, and I don't have the time on that one. Do you have the time on that or what?
Not at hand. Sorry, I can call you back with it.
No, that's all right. We can get it, but it's good to know this.
Okay.
Where can people find out about these activities? Again, on Tuesday, March 26th, it says you're taking action on climate and militarism. It's an online forum. And then also on March 26th, online, The Cross, A View from Gaza with Reverend Mitri Raheb. And, of course, another thing that we all want to, I guess it's the anniversary, 21 years of the Rachel Corrie murder in Israel as she was trying to prevent a bulldozer from destroying a house. Of course, it just ran right over her and killed her, and that was March 16th, 2003, mm-hmm. So... how can people find out about these activities? How can they find out more of what Madison Rafa Sister City Project is doing?
They can go onto our website and sign up for our email list. We have a wonderful newsletter that goes out every week, and it just has all the information of the events that we're putting on, but also other Palestine-focused events in Madison.
Okay.
And Tony, I'm looking here. The film Israelism will be at the Madison Central Library, room 301, from 6 to 9 p.m. On March 25th.
On March 25th. Okay, Israelism. Can you say that time again?
So it's the film, the Monday night screening of Israelism, and it will be at the Madison Central Library, room 301, on March 25th from 6 to 9 p.m.
All right, and that's on Monday. There will be discussion after that. So, all right, well, Aisha, what else? Are there any other things that the Rafa Sister City Project is planning here in Madison?
We one of the projects from Madison Rafa is Read Palestine. We are scheduling the read-alouds at different venues, but we also have book clubs for upper elementary, middle, and high schoolers. So if anyone is interested in joining one of those book clubs, they can feel free to contact us, and we can get you started with them.
All right. And of course, the Vets for Peace, along with other community organizations on Tuesday, March 26, is going to be doing an online discussion on taking action on climate and militarism. Okay. I want to thank you very much for being on the show and letting people know what's going on and how they can become involved.
Thank you for having me, Tony.
Okay. But I think the important thing is today, the Palestinian Mother's Day vigil, starting at 2 o'clock, and then at 3 o'clock today, there's going to be a gathering and some poetry and whatever at the Library Mall today. So.
Yeah, the vigil's at 3 p.m., yep.
Okay. Well, Aisha, thank you so much for being on the show.
All right. Thanks so much. Okay. Have a good day.
Okay. Bye. All right. It's 8:22. A little music, and we'll be speaking with Fernando Garcia around 8:30, so stay tuned, everybody. Something completely different.
One of the most important weapons, instruments in any cause, in any movement, in any strike, is the picket sign. We wrote a song about this. It's in Spanish. We call it El Picket Sign.
Desde Texas a California, campesinos están luchando. Desde Texas a California, campesinos están luchando. Los rancheros a llore y llore, de huelga ya están bien pandos. El picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, conmigo toda la vida. Ya tenemos más del año peleando con esta huelga. Ya tenemos más del año peleando con esta huelga. Un ranchero ya murió y el otro y así su abuela. El picket sign, el picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, el picket sign, conmigo toda la vida. Un primo que tengo yo andaba regando diches. Un primo que tengo yo andaba regando diches. Un día con pagarulo y otro con sanavaviches. El picket sign, el picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, el picket sign, conmigo toda la vida. Me dicen que soy muy necio, gritón y alborota pueblos. Me dicen que soy muy necio, gritón y alborota pueblos. Pero Juárez fue mi tío y Zapata fue mi suegro. El picket sign, el picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, el picket sign, conmigo toda la vida. Y ahora ando organizando la raza en todos los files. Y ahora ando organizando la raza en todos los files. Y muchos siguen comiendo tortillas con puros chiles. El picket sign, el picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, el picket sign, conmigo toda la vida. Hay muchos que no comprenden, aunque uno les da consejos. Hay muchos que no comprenden, aunque uno les da consejos. La huelga es un bien para todos, pero unos se hacen pendejos. El picket sign, el picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, el picket sign, conmigo toda la vida. El picket sign, el picket sign, lo llevo por todo el día. El picket sign, el picket sign, conmigo toda la vida.
One of the most important weapons, instruments in any cause, in any movement, in any strike, is the picket sign. We wrote a song about this. It's in Spanish. We call it El Picket Sign.
It's 8:28. You are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. Joining me on the line is Fernando Garcia. He's the executive director of the Border Network for Human Rights of El Paso. And first of all, good morning, Fernando, and thank you for getting up so early. I know you're an hour behind us, right? Good morning, and thank you for being on WORT.
Yes, yes. Good morning. Thanks for having me, definitely.
All right. Well, this is definitely big news. Just the other day, the U.S. Supreme Court had temporarily sided with the state of Texas in its increasingly bitter fight with the Biden administration over immigration policy, allowing an expansive state law to go into effect that makes it a crime for migrants to enter Texas without authorization, without documentation. Senate Bill 4 is the bill that we're talking about. And can you kind of just give us a little background on what Senate Bill 4 exactly does, first of all, Fernando?
Yes, yes, it is important because I think there's a lot of misconfusion and people in general, people not in Texas, do not understand what is that bill. But let me just put it in two pieces. The bill it has two different sections. The first one is that the state of Texas is given the authority by state law to local police. That means local sheriffs, local police departments, but also state police to question, detain, arrest, and deport migrants that cross or that they're suspicious that they cross the border in Texas. So with that, I think that is a very broad and extended mandate on essentially transforming local police officers into immigration agents and start enforcing what is called the show me your papers policy or law. So I think that is one major element. So anybody in Texas, not only, and this is important, not only anybody crossing the border, but you could be in Dallas and Fort Worth, suddenly you are confronted by this local officer. That officer can actually ask you for your papers. Is it suspicious that you actually came across the border in Texas between ports of entry? And to actually create suspicion in this case, the law is very vague and broad that anything can be reasonable suspicion. Like, for example, the way that you smell, maybe the way that you look. Mm-hmm. So obviously, this is opening a Pandora box in terms of a major systemic civil and human rights violations and discrimination. I think that is the first element in terms of police, local police enforcing federal immigration laws.
Right. Now, so people could be stopped and they could be questioned whether or not they were actually, they committed some sort of misdemeanor or anything. I mean, you're just standing there and a police officer theoretically could just come up to you and ask you for your papers, right? It's not like you were detained or you got caught, you know, something happened or you were driving a car without, taillights and you got pulled over. Are you saying that anyone at any time could be questioned by police officers with this bill?
This is the problem with this before, is that the law and the language is so vague that what the police officers would just need some kind of reasonable suspicion. And for us, I mean, let's try to understand this. I mean, Border Patrol agents that we actually deal with every day here in at the border, they are trained months and months to actually understand how to enforce federal immigration law and especially how to not to use racial profiling.
Right.
To actually stop somebody into asking for papers. Let's remember this. Almost 50% of the population in Texas are Latinos.
Right.
Or Hispanic. So I think, how are you going to know if somebody would have documents? I mean, how are you going to create that suspicion?
You're right. I heard the mayor of San Antonio on the news earlier this morning. As a matter of fact, San Antonio is about 80% Chicano, Mexicano.
That's right.
So it's like, now, there's so many things that we need to discuss on this as far as where it's going to go. Now, the Supreme Court sent it back to Texas, so this law was going to go back into place. But another appeals court then stayed that order and said, no, we are it's still on appeal, so it's really not in effect yet. Can you talk a little bit about how that happened? And what exactly did the Supreme Court do? They didn't say this is okay. They just sent it back to Texas, right?
No. Yes. It is confusing, and it's been a roller coaster. What happened is that initially the course of appeal, in this case, is the Fifth Circuit that is based in New Orleans. It took the case because obviously the state challenged the lower decision that actually stopped the law because of the unconstitutionality grounds. So in the Fifth Circuit, the First Circuit opened the possibility for the Supreme Court to extend a stay or allow it to remain in place. So the Courts of Appeal throw the ball to the Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court took an administrative decision, which we were very surprised either way, that the law should continue to be should be allowed to be implemented while the case is pending in the course of appeal. So, but for us it was very shocking that the decision of the Supreme Court it seems more political than legal because it was along party lines, and for us I think there were a number of elements that the Supreme Court justices should have considered. Such as the basic idea that an state is usurping federal powers and enforcing federal immigration law where they don't have the authority to do so. So the impact to having thousands and thousands of police officers suddenly with no training, with no mandate, suddenly transforming to border patrol agents or immigration agents that would create harm and injury to people. So I think we were surprised that the Supreme Court allowed it to continue. So the Supreme Court did allow it to continue, but again, the Courts of Appeal stopped it once again a few hours later, and that's where we are right now. So the SB4 is not in place until is not being enacted, is not being enforced until the Courts of Appeal take a decision, and I think they're going to take a decision within the next few hours, in a few days.
All right. Now, I mean, one of the big issues here is. It's the federal government's responsibility to enforce the immigration laws and to also guard the border. And this action, if it's allowed to pass, is giving this over to the state. Now, there's so many dangers with that. And we were talking about this the other day. It's kind of like Texas is kind of like, in a way, they're seceding from the union. If they're allowing Texas to take over border responsibilities and enforce immigration law, you know, theoretically not it's going to happen. I mean, Texas could say, hey, we're going to declare war on Mexico or somebody. What about that argument also? What about the Supreme Court abdicating the federal government's authority and handing it over to a Governor Abbott, essentially.
So I think let's understand what is going to happen next. So the Courts of Appeal is going to make a decision on the constitutionality of this law. It's very likely because of how conservative this court is that they're probably going to allow it to stay in place and to be enacted and enforced. So it's going to be taken again back to the Supreme Court. And I think that's where things are going to be a little fussy and crazy, because I cannot imagine how the Supreme Court can take a decision allowing the state of Texas to shape, define, and enforce its own immigration laws, which would actually open to the fact that it's going to open the opportunity and the chaos for 50 states enforcing or applying immigration laws in a different way. I would imagine how then California, which is a more, would say, pro-immigrant or more sympathetic or more, it might then start giving citizenship to people in California, for example, or start not necessarily, would say, enforcing border strategy or border policy. So I think that would be chaos. So I think originally I always thought that the Supreme Court would never allow that chaos to happen. But more and more I'm thinking after the decision that the Supreme Court took a few days ago, that might be a possibility. That at the end, I mean, we're going to have not only in this case in terms of who enforce immigration laws, which is supposed to be part of the federal responsibility, but who's going to enforce IRS laws? I mean, it's going to be every county, every city, every state that is going to be enforcing IRS laws. So I think there is a big debate about what are the responsibilities of the states. But let's remind ourselves this. The state of Texas and Mr. Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, he's doing this because political reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, it is a political game, a dangerous political game. I mean, he's calling migrants invaders. He has deployed thousands of state troopers and state soldiers at the border.
Right.
He's building border walls, barbed wire. He's doing his own little war against refugees and families. And yeah. He's using vitriol and rhetoric that is hurting people already. So at the end of the day, yes, it is about the legality of enforcing federal immigration laws, but also it's about the ideology and the reasons why Texas is doing that.
Right. Now, another thing, talking about the police and in terms of their role in terms of trying to enforce it, a lot of the police are like, we don't want to do this. It's not our job to enforce federal law. We're the police. You know, we got to deal with it. We don't have the resources. We don't have the time for that. Also, they don't know how this is going to work out. According to this law, and Abbott's the brilliant idea is like, well, we're just going to take these people. We're going to send them to Mexico, And many of the people crossing the border are not from Mexico. So it's like, what about Mexico? What is Mexico saying about this plan, by the way?
Yes, and just yesterday, Mexico said that he's not going to actually accept anybody deported by the state of Texas into Mexico. So that is going to be a major, major challenge because for the state of Texas, because, again, I mean, they're going to start deporting people from El Salvador that they found in Houston to Mexico, or they're going to fly them back to El Salvador. Obviously, what Mr. Grega, what they're saying is everybody's going to be trying just deporting into Mexico. Mexico is saying we're not going to do that. So I think that is Mexico actually is now considering to be what did they call it, a friend of the court or right. something like that, that actually to file against that legislation. So I think Mexico is gonna play an important part. He's not willing to allow the state of Texas to start taking deportation actions into Mexico. So I think that is one major element. But I think let me go back to that idea of police departments. Mm-hmm. Police departments, in many cases, including here in El Paso, they have said already that they don't believe that they should enforce S4, that they don't have, yes, the resources, the capacity, but also they don't have the training, and many of them believe that they don't have the authority. However, the state of Texas is threatening police departments, and they are saying, well, if this is the state, this is a state law, you need to enforce it. If not, you're going to be punished. So there is coercion behind the strategy of Mr. Greg Abbott. Many departments and also cities and counties, they are saying that this is an unfunded mandate. So Greg Abbott wants to use state jails, I mean, in this case, county jails and city jails, to transform it into deportation and detention and deportation centers for immigrants without an extra penny for those counties and those cities. Also, there is no training for these police officers to actually enforce something that they do not know, which is mm-hmm. immigration law. Mm-hmm. Just by the fact that understanding that there's like 20 different documents to prove that you're legal in the United States, and Border Patrol has to go through training, extensive training to understand each of those documents, a work visa, a DACA visa, our temporary humanitarian visa, a border crossing card, LPR, resident visa. I mean, there are many, many documents.
Right.
And would you believe that any police officers would actually know that? Well, the reality is that they don't.
And they're not supposed to, really. That's not really their job as it is. We're speaking with Fernando Garcia. He's the executive director of Border Network for Human Rights in El Paso, Texas. Speaking of that, a lot of undocumented people that are crossing the border have done it the right way. That is, they have applied for asylum and they are just waiting for a hearing. So I know that some people now, as they're coming through, they apply for asylum and they're asked to actually wear ankle bracelets so that they can be contacted and they can know where they're at. And so they actually have done it the right way. How would it affect people who have done, you know, sought asylum legally, and how would they be affected by this law also?
Yeah. Well, again, we'll go back to the unfunded mandate and also the fact that many of these police officers and the whole system in place in Texas, the new system, the new immigration system, is not capable to actually distinguish between who is here legally or not. As you say, many people are being processed already with some kind of documents, with pending legal courts, proceedings. And so they might be caught into this, entangled in this enforcement, wrongful enforcement of the law in Texas. This is what would happen. If somebody is arrested under SB4 by a local police officer or a state police officer, they're going to be taken to either a county or city jail, depending on whatever they are, Houston, El Paso, Dallas. And then what the authorities in Texas are saying is that they will have up to 7 days to actually take these people to a state magistrate.
Mm-hmm.
a state judge, and that judge can just simply order the deportation of that person, or just to take them to the bridge. Essentially, it's taking them to the port of entry. But in those 7 days, while these people is in detention, they would not, in the whole process, in the whole system, would not have any contact with the federal system of immigration. So what that means is that people would not have the chance to have the federal release. I mean, there are multiple ways, not only because your case is pending and then you should be released, right? But also there are people that have been here for many, many years that can apply for cancellation of removal, that is called, right? I mean, if you have a family and children that you're a citizen, you have some resources at the in federal courts. But that people is not going to be going through the federal court. It's going to be at the state court. And that state court don't have the legal release and remedies for these people. So I think it's going to be just a pipeline of deportation. I mean, and I'm afraid that also people that are legal in the country might be deported. So we're going to then going to have a major situation of deporting residents and in some cases even citizens under this law.
We see the images on the nightly news and we hear the rhetoric from Trump and Abbott of an invasion, and then they show all the scenes of people crossing the Rio Grande and going through the barbed wire. How much of this is really a crisis and reach that, and how much of it is just hype and exaggeration about how bad the situation is? And I mean, we hear stories from people that actually live on the border, whether they're Mexican Americans or even Anglos. They're like, well, you know, a lot of these people that are crossing are families and whatever, and they're seeking asylum, and they're not a problem. You know, they come here and they're trying to abide by the rules. They wait for the immigration authorities to come and process them, and they want to seek asylum. They're seeking what many people who have come to the this country for hundreds of years, including all the Europeans, were seeking at those times, you know, sanctuary and a new life and a new opportunities. And people are like, they're not the problem. The problem is all these militias and the heavy hand of Abbott. And what about that? I mean, this is a total big political issue, and it may really, it's one of the number one issues for voters. And of course, Trump and the rest of the Republicans, including Abbott, are ginning everything up and exciting everyone and getting them in. But really, how does it affect El Paso, for instance? I mean, is this a problem? Is El Paso not able to deal with everybody crossing?
It is important. This is what we should be asking specifically about the narrative that has been created out of the border. I mean, when they are using this term of the invasion of criminals, that whole term not only is politically charged, is trying to cause fear and anxiety on people, but also is very distorted. So it is not true. I mean, the people that is not at the border, but they are in the interior of the United States, they are listening to this rhetoric and say we're invaded by criminals, rapists. I mean, remember, Trump called Mexicans, my family, my relatives, my neighbors, criminals and rapists. So I think that's the way that now is being portrayed in Texas. I mean, that there's a so-called invasion. An invasion, as you know, I mean, invasion is like a force that goes goes into another territory with ill intentions and to take control and usually by force and in arm, right? So that is not the case. I mean, if I would describe a picture of what is happening in Texas, what I will tell you is that there's the Rio Grande River there on one side, Mexico, on the other side, the United States. On the United States side, you will see thousands and thousands of state soldiers, border walls, barbed wire, weapons, technology. I mean, the whole paraphernalia of launching a war. Mm-hmm. And on the Mexican side, you will see families, children, people looking for protection, asking for some kind of asylum or refugee status. Because most of the people that is coming to the border, the vast majority are leaving because leaving the countries of origin by force. They've been displaced either by violence that is happening, criminal violence that happens in not only in Mexico, but also in El Salvador, in Guatemala, and all of these places, but also by dictatorships, by corruption, by economic depression. So people is being forced to leave, and they are arriving to the border. So they are not coming with ill intentions of conquering anything. They are just wanted to have. They are coming to America, but because that's been the historic tradition of America. America is a place of immigrants, so they are coming to look for a chance or to look for protection. So it's a distortion that Republicans and extremists have used to actually paint them as criminals. Mm-hmm. Now, living in El Paso, Texas, right now is safer. Is one of the safest cities in the nation. El Paso is safer than Washington, D.C. And at some point, I used to say that El Paso, Texas was safer than the White House in many ways. Right. And we have immigrants coming in. And yes, we do have challenges. And if we have any crisis, we have a humanitarian crisis. That means the United States is allowing children and women to sleep in the streets of downtown El Paso without water, without food, without basic services. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have that challenge. We don't have welcoming infrastructure. What we have done historically, the border is used to build walls and build detention centers, deportation centers. We had built a whole enforcement apparatus that actually had militarized our communities. So this idea that people is coming and trickling down and invading the country is false, but we do have a challenge of migrant families coming to the United States looking for protection.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what your organization, the Border Network for Human Rights, is doing in your mission?
Yes, we are a 25-year-old organization. We've been working at the Texas border. Essentially, one, educating and informing migrants, but also border residents about their constitutional rights and human rights. I mean, mostly we launch educational campaigns. But also we document cases of brutal human rights and civil rights violations, and we actually report them, and we issue and we release yearly reports on violations of human rights at the border. At the same time, we do community organizing. That means we organize along the border to essentially try to foster some kind of change about the situation that is impacting border communities, because this is the thing. Border policy and immigration policy is not only affecting migrants coming across the border, but also those millions of border residents that are U.S. citizens that are under an special or different treatment as the rest of the country. We're being detained and stopped in checkpoints. We're being harassed, even though we are U.S. citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So I think our goal is to change that practice of violation of rights at the border.
Then that mentality, which it appears is going to take a long time to change now, especially with the way things are going in this country. Fernando Garcia, I know you have to go here. You got to get to something else pretty soon. But what do you think is going to happen now with the appeals court? And you're expecting a decision as soon as today, right?
Yes. Yeah, yes, and just let me mention something that I wanted to mention at the beginning.
Okay.
That is just another part of the law. Is that another section of the law says that if you are transporting somebody that is undocumented, you can actually be charged with smuggling criminal charges in this case.
Right,
so you can be putting in. So that means if I take in my grandma
mm-hmm.
to the clinic,
right,
and somehow I stop by a DPS or a state trooper or a local police officer, and they question my grandma. My grandma crossed the border in Texas, and she said that she's undocumented.
Right.
She's gonna be detained and deported. But I'm driving, and I'm driving, and I'm a U.S. citizen. I can be charged with with criminal smuggling charges without to 5 years in prison.
You're right. So in a so way, they're going to...
By the fact that we have a relationship with my grandma.
You're
that
right.
is undocumented.
Well, not only that, it's a very chilling effect for those who are assisting undocumented folks, U.S. citizens who are assisting them in whatever way, whether or not giving them a ride to the clinic or whether they're family or not. It's like trying to stop you guys from doing your work. So
it is more than just impacting undocumented people. It's going to impact Texans as such, right?
Okay.
So what I'm expecting is that there's the, I mean, I just hope that the Courts of Appeal is going to allow the injunction to stay indefinitely until there's a decision on the court. So that's my expectation. I think it's going to be very, hopefully, as before, it's not going to be allowed to stay in place until there's a decision on the Courts of Appeal. That is my expectation. But, you know, you never know at this point. Courts have made decisions that are being very irrational in the last few days.
Right.
So it can go either way. So maybe tomorrow the appeals court decided to allow it to continue and to be enforced while the case is pending. So we don't know. I mean, that's the kind of uncertainty that we are going through in Texas.
All right. Fernando Garcia, I want to thank you very much for being on the show this morning. And this is definitely an issue that we will continue to follow, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I appreciate the work you do also.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Wow. It's 8:57. How's it going?
I don't know, man. It's crazy.
It sure is. Things are going crazy around here. I don't know if we got time for the captain. Maybe we'll give him a call. What the heck?
Let's see
get
what's
a little
up.
Weather.
I know we're going to need it. I don't know if you've heard. There's snow coming.
We don't need captain, man. Oh, we got you now.
I know. All I know is if there's snow or not snow. I think captain's got more details.
All right. Well, let's play a little corrido music.
De México vine buscando dinero, llegué de bracero por el mes de abril.
It's 8:58. We got a minute with the captain here. Captain Seto, sorry I haven't talked to you in a while. There is weather.
That's quite all right, Tony. The only big news is they're calling for snow starting tonight at about 11 where you are and lasting until tomorrow afternoon, and they're predicting between 4 and 8 inches. So
wow.
If you have chores you need to get done, do them today. You know, you need to get out and get some stuff done, do it today, and stay off the roads.
Come
tomorrow
on.
If you can.
4 to 8 inches, that's nothing, man. We used to get that all the time.
I understand. It's the upper Midwest.
Out.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, we forgot how to deal with real winters here.
I understand. No, I'm thinking more in terms of, as a former snowplow operator, you know, just stay off the roads if the snow's coming in. Let them get the roads cleared. That's all.
Captain, I hear
anyway,
that.
Anyway, after that, it's just going to be chilly all weekend, with highs only in the upper mid-30s, and it won't warm up at all until about next Monday where it gets back up to 50. But anyway, the big news is the snow that's coming in.
Snow's coming in. And
supposedly.
And Mayor Satya is going to have you come on down and run the snow removal thing.
Oh,
right,
absolutely. And I'm going to get all the old foremen and workers back, and, you know, they'll just clean up the mess just toot sweet, as they say.
All right, Captain. Thank you very much for that one. Good to talk to you. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Okay, buddy. Take care. Be kind, everyone. Bye-bye.
All right. There you have it, everybody. I want to thank our guest, Fernando Garcia, from the Border Network for Human Rights of El Paso, and also Aisha from Rafa Sister City Project. Eli?
Tony, we can't go over this today. I know Jeff is yelling at us about how long this show goes over and bleeds into Hajira all the time.
I know, and it's kind of funny, because Jeff is in Puerto Rico, Jeff Spitzer-Resnick. Hajira is going to go on, and for some reason, he's allowing me to do the show, but I'm going over my show, and I actually wanted to end on time for once. Which
hilarious that the only time you end on time is the time Jeff's
listening.
Not here.
He's probably listening. And he's like, yeah. Well, now that I'm doing the show, we're going to end on time. But This is WORT 89.9 FM, and I'm going to be doing the Hejira along with my good friend Arnold Gonzalez. So everybody stay tuned, and I think we got it. I think we're hooked up and almost ready to go. But Eli, thank you very much for being there. You can go now.
Awesome. Great show, Tony. No longer need me. We're done.
All right. That's it. It's 9 o'clock, everybody. This is WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin.
¿Qué vieja? Tengo 3 años casada y nomás sufriendo errores. Tú gastando puro dólar, yo sufriendo los dolores.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Thursday, March 21st.
Too many American newspapers have shut down or shriveled to irrelevance, but luckily, we still have such bastions of local journalism as the Chicago Chronicle and New York News Daily. But wait, those aren't real newspapers, aren't local, and aren't even American. They are Russian fake news outlets created in recent weeks by Putin's propagandists to interfere in our presidential election. They are web publications with names and designs that mimic real U.S. news sites but have no reporters or local newsrooms. Rather, they exist solely to fabricate, quote, news reports that appear legitimate, getting picked up and re-reported as fact in understaffed chain-owned newspapers, then promoted on right-wing social media sites. This is what happens to people and democracy when local journalism is stripped away or hollowed out. No one is on regular watch, allowing charlatans, profiteers, and propagandists to dupe unsuspecting residents. Not only have hundreds of papers been eliminated, but half of the remaining dailies are now owned by Wall Street predators like SoftBank, the Japanese.